Hello, and welcome to More Than a Movie, the weekly show about films and filmmaking here on Campus FM. My name's Andrew Bonello, and along with a guest I'll welcome onto the show shortly, we'll take a journey into the magical world of movies. Let's explore how films can powerfully reflect real-life struggles and joys, making them more than just a movie. This week, we're diving beneath the waves. That's right, we'll plunge down into the murky depths for submarine drama, mystery, and thrilling action that wades into genre territory, as is our wont here on the show. Yes, whether it's ice-cold water that makes us tremble, or otherworldly creepiness sending shivers down our spine, you're advised to bring a very large hot water bottle along for the ride. Coming up later, helming a Soviet Cold War submarine is a task and a half, to be sure. But what if a passenger along for the ride is intent on causing even bigger problems?
Captain, I need you to put us under that ship.
We have men below.
Then you should get them out.
Bob, we have a problem with battery deck 2.
Yeah, what is it?
Not sure, sir. The men are coming up now.
We follow an explorer into the darkest depths with nothing but a radio for company.
I know how alone you feel. Alone in all that cold blackness. But I'm there in the dark with you.
And a sorry subcrew rescues three shipwreck survivors, ending up in a world of pain for their troubles.
Just how much longer can we not say what we're all thinking? I don't believe we're alone down here.
Both our periscopes are down, our sonar is gone, we are blind and nearly deaf.
But before we don our sub-aqua suits, let me begin by introducing our guest this week. Maxime Durand is an independent short film writer and director, with some 55 titles already under his belt, produced both in his native France, as well as in the UK, and here in Malta. His film Lost Fort was screened at Malta Indie Shorts in March 2021. In recent years, Maxime has also branched into different roles on larger productions, working as an extras casting assistant and doing more than his fair share of acting as well. And Maxime joins me in the studio today. Welcome.
Thank you for inviting me.
Great to have you here, Maxime. I'm so excited about this. So, to start with, do you remember the first film you saw when you were young that really hooked you onto the idea of film as a medium?
To be honest, not really. I can't really remember what film it was. I think it was really a group of many things that I've seen. I had also have a whole older brother and sister, which sometimes I would sneak in to watch movies with them that I was probably too young to watch. And TV as well, actually. I was actually quite attracted by TV series and things like this.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's too many to really remember.
So a combination, fair enough. So as I mentioned in the intro, Maxime, you've done quite a bit of acting, and I believe you worked on a fairly recent Terrence Malick movie, The Way of the Wind, is that right?
Yes.
And that was shooting, was that here in Malta, or was that across the way in Sicily, or where was the shoot?
They shot in quite a few locations. Malta was one of them. I think I would call Iceland as well, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And a very, very small bit, but it was, I had a little bit in Sicily.
Okay, and what kind of a scene were you doing? What was, tell us a bit about that, obviously, without revealing too much about the movie.
No, it was pretty much, it was like a one-on-one with Mark Rylance. That was the real thing that was quite striking, is to see an actor of that caliber to be that close, basically.
Yeah, so working up close with Mark Rylance, who was in Wolf Hall and the Steven Spielberg film Bridge of Spies, and a very accomplished theatre actor in the UK, of course. What was the feeling like on set, on Malick's set?
It was very relaxed. It was actually a second unit,
okay.
But it was very, very relaxed. It was a small, it was kind of friendly, small, with a big production like this. It was very unusual, but it was it was flowing.
Small crew, big cast, small
crew,
everything?
Small crew and for that section.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting to see something that was closer to how I make short films, in the sense of Terrence Malick is very known for being like he lets things going. He does very, very long shots of like 20 minutes, 40 minutes sometimes, and he lets actors just go over things again and again and again. And so it's kind of
it's sort of a more sort of organic way of
exactly. It's like he's waiting for this little special thing that it's not really scripted, basically.
But he probably knows exactly what he's looking
for. Yes.
Okay, interesting. And so, moving on to another production, you've done some work with the actress Natasha McElhone, I believe.
Yes, that was a small bit as well, but it's in a actually part Canadian, part Maltese production. It was written and directed by Valerie Braja, and I had a small bit with her. It was again one-on-one, and it was intimidating, obviously, but it was an emotional scene, so it's kind of interesting to go into that level with, again, someone of that.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's quite unusual to get opportunities to work at that level, so you're obviously doing really well. 7 Days in Entebbe is another show that you mentioned, a film that was shot here a few years ago. Tell us a little bit about that experience.
Yes, that was like the first, I was an extra that we had. I think it was about 170 extras to be hostages. So, because the film is about that.
It's about a hijacking of an hijacking, aircraft, yeah. Right?
So it's just based on a true story. And it was 5 weeks, which is very rare for an extra to stay 5 weeks on a set.
Indeed.
So including 1 week in London, where they actually travelled a big portion of the extras to London to film in the iconic Ealing Studios to do a inside of a plane, like shots basically. And that was special because it was like witnessing for 5 weeks the evolution of the film being made. Almost everything was shot in Malta, almost.
Right.
And covering for Uganda, which is kind of funny. And to see José Padilla, the director, to see him work for 5 weeks, to see Daniel Bull and Rosamund Pike, two actors. Again, same thing. To see
the principles in the film, I
exactly
guess.
The principles, and also a complete different way of working. So it's kind of, you know, it was very, very interesting. And I met a lot of people that were extras or featured extras or whatever that became friends, and a lot of them became like participated in short films I've done. And
right, future collaborators.
Yes, like. Yes.
And so 5 weeks though as an extra, was that because there was a lot of prep or rehearsing for scenes that the team of extras were involved in, or was it just the volume of shots that needed to be made with you guys as part of the ensemble on screen?
Well, the title 7 Days in Entebbe, which is, that's it, it's basically the hostages are there throughout the story, so
for a week.
So it was just because the hostages, the extras, had to be there all the time, pretty much the whole story.
Very interesting. Okay, thank you. So let's change pace a little bit here, Maxime. Our theme for the show today is diving beneath the waves, submarine and underwater movies. Have you got a film in that sort of little niche that you're keen to talk about today?
There's a 2019 film called Le Chant du Loup.
C'est quoi la guerre acoustique? C'est dangereux?
Ok, j'ai peut-être quelque chose dans la trace. Du 4 temps.
Il n'y a pas de sous-marin à 4 balles.
Je sais.
Le rendez-vous avec les nageurs, là, c'est oui ou c'est non?
Le Chant du Loup. Il nous a détecté second.
Poste de combat, tu diffuses.
On doit récupérer les nageurs, c'est la mission. Trois splashes sur sonar.
So, Antonin Baudry's 2019 sci-fi adventure, known as The Wolf's Call in English, it's a native French film by production. Tell us, Maxime, what did you enjoy so much about this film?
It's because it's quite rare to see a French film going full-on big production thriller action on top of being submarine movies. So once every 10 years I'm probably gonna switch to a little bit of patriotism.
and
it was surprisingly good, and Very good cast. The main character is not that famous internationally, but it's supported by Omar Sy, who is becoming big, and Mathieu Kassovitz, who is an actor that who also became international, but also is an international director.
Great.
And another character in that film is Sound.
Okay.
Which is a like the main character is basically a sonar, a, like acoustic expert with the perfect pitch, and so the sound takes a big space in that film.
So him listening to the sonar signals, interpreting and sort of making sense of what's going on that way is a central theme of the film.
Exactly. Really? It's kind of all around that, really. There's a major situation, I'm not going to spoil, but there's a major situation going on. And yeah, and he kind of is specially talented in that sector, and it's more than sonar, it's everything else. It's every movement in the sea is capable of recognizing any kind of like noise of any kind, really. He's very anyway, and it's so that has something that is special to it, and then the suspense, the story itself, the suspense, the it really takes you on the ride, really. So
fantastic. Okay, well, so let's go back to talk a bit about your work now, Maxime. So you've directed quite a few short films in your time, spread over quite a few years. How have those typically come about? Are you an ideas person as a filmmaker? Do you kind of have a list of stories, like, tucked away somewhere that you've always wanted to make, or do you visit locations and find inspiration that way? How does that creative process spark for you?
All of the above.
All really. Of the above, right?
Yeah, it really depends. It sometimes it's an idea, sometimes it's a location, sometimes it's an object, a photograph. I did a 45 psychological thriller, kind of conspiracy theory type thriller.
Like 45 minutes long, you mean?
Yeah, 45 okay. minutes long. Which was all based on a couple of costumes I had, and it kind of sparked the idea behind it of an impossible photo. It's kind of like a journalist type, journalist against corporation type film.
Okay, very interesting. And how do things work with bringing your team together for those productions? Have you got a big team of collaborators that you've built up over a long time, or?
It is really mainly being surrounded by amazing friends, and I've been very lucky in France, in England, and here. So it is really that. Then obviously collaborations with people that are also interested in filmmaking and all this, that came about more in Malta because it's smaller, so it kind of more likely to happen. But then it's really that I like to even how can I say, take people that are really not at all, never done this before.
Right.
I like to try out with these people sometimes.
Giving new arrivals to the profession a chance.
Right? Yeah, I mean, it's either just to try and experiment, because I see filmmaking as a whole. I don't only see it as an industry, you know, and so I see it as something to have fun with, to tell a story, as art as well, of course. But so I kind of like to introduce it to people that've never tried it. It can be acting, it can be something else, it can be really other, you know. But then I am used to, for a very long time, to not have a crew, which probably over the years has taught me a lot, because obviously you have to find your own ways to do things. But so I have assistants, of course. When I have a big scene or I have a lot of people on this, I will ask someone to come and help me as an assistant. But I am used to do everything on set. And I like to do it that way.
And not just on set, right? As I understand it, you also get very involved in the shooting itself often, and editing of your shorts. So yes. post-production side as well.
Yeah, post-production is something that I enjoy greatly. So I like to have total control on that.
Right.
There's a bit of a rule in cinema is that if you're the director, you shouldn't be the editor, because you have an emotional attachment to what you filmed. But but I want to use that emotional attachment, to be honest, and I think it's, again, it's a whole, as well, it's because the writing, it's just kind of, it's a whole, really. So it's emotional on every side, in a way. So it breaking that part for one, you know, one process doesn't feel right.
Okay. Obviously, it depends on the scope and the scale of the production, right? There may be bigger films which you need help with the editing and the post side of things.
Yes. It's like it's really something specific where it involves CGI that is above my skills. Then yes, obviously I'm going to ask for some help. Yes.
Sure. So going back to your shorts that you made in France, is there a film you made in that period that you're kind of particularly fond of?
There's one that I did that was the very earlier days, which is called Get 70s Down, which is actually a kind of a spoof of like a detective gangster story in the 1970s. And it's a group of friends. We just actually said, we walked out of a movie set in the 70s. I think it was Starsky and Hutch,
okay.
A remake of Ben Stiller.
Okay.
And I think when we came out, there's something from the 70s, the vibe of the 70s really hit us all equally.
Okay.
And it sparked the idea of like, we have to do a short film. And that turned into a longer one. And it took us 2 years to make. And again, the same way. So it was another level for me because this time it was like, okay, now I have to source props and location that are 70s, wigs, whatever, costumes, everything. So it became a real, the first time that I did something that big. And the film is like 45 minutes as well, I think, something like this. So it's obviously, it was done in 2004. I think something like this. So it obviously, you know, it's not the quality of like very, you know, very amateurish and
more
all this,
basic,
but
more basic. Yeah.
But it's yes, it's kind of stays close to my heart because of the size of the thing, 2 years as well. So it was
a large part of your life put into that film.
Yeah, and it actually really sparked the beginning of everything else, like in a way of if everything felt more possible after this one, basically.
So you mentioned the costumes and the props, and I've done some work with you, I'm privileged to say, and I came to your apartment, and you have got an astonishing number of costumes and film props and equipment in your apartment. How has that happened? Are you someone who wants to create your own, is it a cost issue? Is it the creativity side? How have you amassed so much film equipment over the years?
Again, it's a little bit of both, really, because, yeah, I do things with little to zero budget. And yeah, so as I have to do them myself, then I'm also limited. I'm not a costume designer by, you know. So cost and then the creativity is often pushed by this as well.
Right.
Because in a way, when you have to do something that is period, then you have to find a way to make it credible. So charity shops a lot. People are get aware as well that I need costumes and clothes, so they actually very generous when they need to get rid of something, they just give it to me and see if I can use it. So it's pretty much that.
And presumably some of your collaborators are also people with expertise on the sort of the costume and the
design. Yes. So it has happened where, again, something is so big that I can't handle it, really. Sci-fi, for example, I did for a web series was I needed the help of actual experts.
Great. And so talking about short films that you've made since arriving here in Malta, was there a standalone short that you've made that you particularly sort of hold in with fond memories?
Well, you've mentioned Lost Fort, so that is definitely one.
Tell us a bit about the story of Lost Fort.
In the sense of the story of the...
just the plot, sort of the outline.
Well, it's a woman, basically, that is questioning her last 10 years and the choices she's made and the path she took in her life. And she lands in this mysterious place that technically doesn't exist to her, and it kind of challenges her on all this, on all these questions, basically, in an unusual way, let's say. It's there's a bit of science fiction in a way, in a way. And
you've got a role in the film as well.
Yeah, I have a small bit. I'm not too happy about that.
I liked your performance, actually.
Thank you. Yes, I had a small bit. Same thing. It was made in a very short amount of time, and it had to be, so a very limited amount of time and people.
I see. Well, so people who are listening to the show, they may recognize your name, because one of the biggest pieces of work you made here in Malta is a web series called Coming Soon. Tell us a little bit about how that came about.
It was sparked by several things. It was sparked by the fact that I'm a big fan of Malta as an island, as a location, as a place to live, of course, as well. But it's the amount of diversity, and the amount of locations that is famously used in big films and big productions. Obviously, that was one of the things. You know, Comino was always a Western cowboy, background for me. And it was a bit of a love letter to cinema as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because in every episode there's different short films, and every short film has different genre of cinema and covers not all of cinema, but a big portion. And then also sparked by, with a message, because it's satire, a satire spin on a message, on a situation that is transport problems. Malta knows them very well, but the rest of the world as well. But in Malta, it's very particular because it is small, so it's quite in your face.
But transport, obviously, is, like you said, an issue that really everyone struggles with at various points all over the world. Mm-hmm. So you've got these episodes. You've got westerns. You've got action. You've got sort of espionage. You've got, running the whole gamut of cinema genres, really. Is there one of the genres, one of the episodes that particularly sort of stands out for you? Tell us a bit about one of your Coming Soon episodes.
It's a bit of a cliche, but it's your babies when you do things like this. So it's not really. There's some where, like the cowboys one was something that, because I don't get to do that very often, obviously. Mm-hmm. That was something that really was really fun to make, and challenging, but very fun to make. I've never done a World War II espionage flick either before, so some of them were very new to me. Horror as well was very mm-hmm. new. They all had their very specific way of going about making it, and
a different kind of story told in each episode.
Exactly, exactly. And some surprises as well of some things that came up along the way that, you know.
And so if people listening want to have a look at some of your episodes of Coming Soon, has it got a webpage on Facebook for the series?
So I actually, it's on my page, which is Max Du and Films. There's pretty much everything there.
Okay, so they can find Coming Soon there as well.
The links and all this are there, so yeah.
Fantastic. All right. Well, thank you for telling us about that. Let's see. Let's have a look before we get to the end here. If you had funds, Maxime, to make a feature, any feature you want. You've got no budgetary constraints, you can cast whoever you want, you can stage it, you shoot it wherever you want. What kind of a feature would you make?
That's a very good question. I think it would be about mental health.
Okay, fantastic.
But I don't have the recipe yet. But it would have to be told in a way that hasn't been really discussed before.
So you think about a story, portraying a story through a character who's struggling with some aspect of mental health?
Characters, okay. Not one character. Okay. I think that would be the thing, really. I don't have the recipe for it, but it's something that has been maybe for like over a decade in the back of my head as something that needs to be strongly discussed. But it can be very strongly dramatic as well, so it would have to have a spin to to make it more attractive, you know, if it's comedy or if, I don't know, but it would have to be something like this, yeah.
So you're not necessarily thinking about a straight drama 100%. You'd put a bit of a genre spin on it, probably?
Yeah, exactly. Probably not drama, to be honest.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But you haven't decided yet?
I haven't decided yet.
Very tantalizing. Gosh, listen to this, people. He's had an idea percolating away for a decade. And you know, so if someone wants a feature made, there you go. There's some very interesting ideas here. Fantastic. Are you writing anything at the moment or working on anything at the moment, Maxime?
I'm not writing anything of my own, but I have... just finished a music video for the band Dune, which will premiere actually on TVM on the 21st of May.
Great. So that's a local Maltese band.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes. They sing in Maltese. It's it was a very interesting collaboration as well because of the people involved in the set design and all this. So this was actually a crew, you know, yes, and I'm going to be participating very shortly, very soon, in a Sharpshoot Media production, docu-drama.
And what's the period? What's the sort of, can you talk at all about that?
What I can say is that it's about forgotten heroes, female heroes of World War II. So it's going to be pretty much around that.
Fantastic.
Very interesting.
That sounds like a really cool project, both of them, actually. So do tune into TVM on May 21st, I think you said, for the
music Friday.
Great. Well, thank you, Maxine. This was so nice having you on the show talking to us about your work. We wish you the very best of luck. You've done a lot of great work already, but we're looking forward to seeing much more, hopefully, on a cinema screen near us soon, once things reopen again. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks to you, Andrew.
Now then, what about movies diving beneath the waves that was shot here in Malta? Well, the island is home to the film Water Tanks at Malta Film Studios, so predictably there's no shortage of submarine movies and TV made here over the years. We mentioned it back in episode 2, Das Boot, the 2018 TV series, has shot more than one season here in Malta already. And way back in episode 2 of the first season of our show, there was 1989's Leviathan, which sees deep sea miners come face to face with a Soviet genetic experiment gone wrong.
Currently with a Russian fleet in the Baltic Sea.
Currently it's rusted junk and we're looking at it. What's your air reading?
20 minutes.
Do something quick.
The Boston, my crew's in jeopardy.
But you have no proof.
I'm ordering you to start an emergency medical evacuation.
What if it turns out to be nothing?
Help me.
Leviathan, shot here in Malta. It's a fun enough romp, albeit a somewhat cheesy one. Also filmed here, back in episode 10 of season 1, we discussed Ghost Boat. Only Fools and Horses' very own David Jason tries to decode the amnesiac mystery of a submarine he was a crew member of during the Second World War some 40 years prior.
This is impossible. There's practically no degradation here. The contacts are all good. What's our battery status?
In the green. Circuit breaker's open, but there's juice in the cells.
I don't know where she's been. She's not been at the bottom of the sea.
And the list goes on. Of course, there's one submarine title filmed in Malta that probably needs no introduction. But let's introduce it anyway.
Everybody falling now!
What's going on here?
Fine.
Gentlemen, it's our turn.
In the last great war.
All ahead two-thirds.
All ahead two-thirds, huh?
A group of young Americans was sent to overpower a Nazi submarine.
The S-33 will rendezvous with a U-boat posing as the German resupply sub.
And steal a secret that could turn the tide of battle.
You'll be all right, son.
Yes, Hollywood came here with bells and whistles in the year 2000 for U-571. Talk about big hitters, Matthew McConaughey, Harvey Keitel, the late great Bill Paxman, heck, even John Bon Jovi's in this film. It's heavy on water tank work, of course, and heavy on action, too. Jonathan Mostow directs, and this was just a couple of years after his very accomplished road trip thriller Breakdown, starring Kurt Russell. Well, I've somehow managed to live the last 20 years or so without watching U-571, so I can't really vouch for its prowess as a submarine classic, but critical reception, for the most part, floated many fathoms above rock bottom, so you might well find it worth checking out.
When they realize what you've discovered, they'll send every ship in the Navy to destroy you.
Venturing beyond the briny depths lapping Malta's rocky shores, let's discover films to truly make us shiver, diving deep beneath the waves.
At 09:22 local time today, an American nuclear submarine, the USS Montana, with 156 men aboard, went down about 22 miles from here. There's been no contact with the sub since then. The cause of the incident is not known.
We're oil workers. When it comes to the safety of these people, there's me and then there's God.
Frederick, and it's going to be making our lives real interesting in a few hours.
From 1989, it's James Cameron's underwater mystery encounter, The Abyss. 1989 was a big year for underwater movies in Hollywood. Leviathan, just mentioned earlier, was from the same year, as was Deep Star 6, a delightful little sub-aquatic monster flick that's unabashed B-movie fun, and one that's aged pretty well at that. But those two films were arguably both trying to warm up in the adjacent thermoclines of The Abyss, a huge production with some of the most impressive water tank work done, even to this day. Ed Harris, Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio, and Michael Biehn star in a rather charming underwater adventure that melds espionage, drama, and science fiction to considerable effect.
Oh, you remember that time? You were pretty drunk, you probably don't remember. But the power went out in that little apartment we had on Orange Street. We were staring at that one little candle, and I said something really dumb, like, that candle is me, like every one of us is out there alone in the dark in this life.
James Cameron is arguably one of the most important film directors of our age, with more than one masterpiece under his belt. Consider 1986's Aliens and 1991's Terminator 2 Judgment Day, both of which Cameron wrote as well as directed. Those two films must be up there as, debatably, two of the greatest genre sequels ever made. But he's on fine form here in The Abyss, which actually crosses various genre boundaries, as we've already mentioned. It also has several intriguing shifts in tone between the film's principal sequences.
It's wonderful.
It's me.
Seawater.
The Abyss goes on to delve into some pretty deep and dark territory in the third act, before a finale that some critics had problems with. So wide-reaching, really, was the scope of the screenplay thematically. That's right, Cameron wrote the screenplay for The Abyss too. But narrative niggles aside, you'll find lots to enjoy here. The set design of the underwater station is terrific, and the underwater miniature model work is spectacularly good. Even the computer-generated effects are decent, though this was, of course, a time when computer animation in film was very much in its nascence. Cameron has done a lot of water work, though. There was, of course, 1997's Titanic, which swept the Oscars that year, winning a staggering 11 awards. But starting out under the waves for The Abyss, this earlier film in Cameron's oeuvre arguably laid much of the groundwork for Titanic, technically, pun not intended. What's more, as of 2021, The Abyss was remastered in 4K, using artificial intelligence deep learning. And the pun actually does work this time, eh? Don your diving helmet, then, for The Abyss.
Well, if you remember any of this, I'm sure you remember the next part. But there are two candles in the dark. I'm with you. I'll always be with you, buddy. I know how alone you feel. Alone in all that cold blackness. But I'm there in the dark with you.
A quick musical interlude now. Let's take a little listen to the main theme from the soundtrack of The Abyss, composed by Alan Silvestri. For more mystery on a huge underwater rig, you might also enjoy episode 10 from the first season of our show, in which I discussed Barry Levinson's 1998 sci-fi movie Sphere, starring Dustin Hoffman and Sharon Stone.
Don't get too excited, Ted. Turn this thing over, it'll probably say made in Korea.
Somehow I doubt that, Harry.
No doors, no hinges of any kind.
I'll bet you if you put a laser micrometer on this thing, you'd find that it was a perfect sphere. I mean, perfect, down to the thousandth of an inch. That's a message in and of itself.
Really?
What do you mean?
We're back onto submarines again for our next couple of movies, though. Firstly, when a World War II submarine crew rescues three survivors from a sunken hospital ship, it turns out to be just the start of a very bad day. From 2002, this is Below.
Radar contact. Starboard beam, 7 miles out, sir.
Stand by to board survivors.
It's a warship approaching, guys. Move! Next man.
Three survivors. One's a woman.
The film's directed by David Toohey, and gosh, what a fascinating genre director he's been. A prolific screenplay writer, Toohey hasn't directed a huge number of features, but they're certainly noteworthy. He's best known for Pitch Black, starring Vin Diesel, which spawned the Riddick sci-fi movies. Check out also, though, Toohey's first feature, 1996's The Arrival, not to be confused with Denis Villeneuve's more recent sci-fi film, Arrival, from 2016. Nay, The Arrival stars a young Charlie Sheen in what's actually a pretty intelligent sci-fi genre flick, albeit now a somewhat dated one. Check out also Toohey's 2009 film A Perfect Getaway, an intriguing genre exercise that, while not exactly a slam dunk, is an intriguing meta-movie of sorts. Check it out for yourself to see what I mean. Back to 2002's Below, though, Tui packs his sub with a talented cast. Bruce Greenwood is joined by British actors Olivia Williams and Jason Fleming, along with Zach Galifianakis, who you'll know from Hollywood comedies like The Hangover. Several other well-known faces man the various stations in this very mechanical period sub.
Con, 5-degree gradient at 270 feet. Cold water deflects sound waves, just in case they decide to...
The film's not shy to lean into genre tropes, as is Tui's style, really. Since one of the survivors is a woman, the crew can't seem to help but get distracted, when they really should be keeping their eye on the ball, as it were.
Try not to fraternize with the men. Some of them get a little strange.
Strangers and superstitious.
Isn't strange.
Best looking bad luck I ever saw.
This is a moody piece, the music backing up the film's inexorable slide into supernatural territory. The sound design, in particular, combines to lend a lot of creepiness to the proceedings. There have been a few notable attempts to get all spooky in underwater environs, but Tui exploits the close confines and tight-angle cinematography here, really ramping up tension and mystery as the metal tube apparently hurtles ever closer to oblivion.
Accidents happen, right? Maybe someone doesn't want us to make it home.
Maybe we're spending more time watching that broad than watching our backs.
Mr. Bryce, we wanted to ask you about Captain Winters.
What'd you tell her?
The story.
The submarine isn't a good place to keep secrets.
And I have to give credit to cast and crew here for rendering a supernatural story against a very authentic wartime submarine backdrop. This was a challenging shoot and no mistaking it, with plenty of tank work and more than a few external special effects shots added into the mix. So if you're a fan of veritably losing your marbles in one of the most claustrophobic and indeed most dangerous environments imaginable, then you really need to crack open the airlock and take a look down below.
Just how much longer can we not say what we're all thinking? I don't believe we're alone down here.
Both our periscopes are down, our sonar is gone, we are blind and nearly deaf.
They were trained to fight the enemy above.
Emergency, dive! Dive! Dive!
But nothing could prepare them.
We're on a runaway boat, fellas.
For the terror below.
This boat is cursed.
I think we should all just take a deep breath.
We stay subbound for our next film, but cross sides into Cold War era Russia. The haunted captain of a Soviet submarine is forced to leave family behind, leading a submarine mission shrouded in secrecy. From 2013, this is Phantom.
My crew has just returned from 76 days at sea. There must be a dozen boats better rested.
The squadron commander's insisting on the most experienced captain and crew available.
Captain!
These are technicians from the Special Projects Institute.
They're testing some kind of prototype equipment.
We'll try to stay out of your way.
Good luck with that. I'm always surprised it isn't harder to leave than it is.
Todd Phillips directs, here again creating a very believable period submarine set, this time from the 1960s Soviet Cold War era. And we have another movie today with Ed Harris in the lead role. He really likes his underwater movies, I guess, eh? Although here, his is a far more tormented character than in The Abyss. Support comes from genre regulars Lance Henriksen and William Fichtner, and believe it or not, David Duchovny. Yes, it's the X-Files agent Mulder, here taking on a brooding role indeed. I rather enjoyed his performance as the head of a covert team aboard the submarine. He's absolutely intent on testing out the new piece of experimental equipment that they've brought on board.
The Phantom. Firing keys.
You understand this is completely classified.
Your technicians
have no personal records.
I don't want any of our crew getting between them and whatever the hell it is they're doing.
There's something down here with us. It's outside the ship.
Do you know what's going on?
Why are we slowing?
Bad contact.
You ever start a war, Mr. Bruni?
You know something I don't?
Because our mission will be compromised.
That presumes you know what our mission is.
Somebody dive the boat or I'll shoot the captain.
Like our previous film, Below, we have a palpable and claustrophobic environment here, serving as the backdrop for a story that's less supernatural in this case, and really more a tale of Cold War paranoia, with an intriguing technological angle added in. And the tension starts to mount barely hours after the boat has left port.
Helm, steer a course for 274.
274. Aye, sir.
The heading puts us extremely close to the American fleet.
Correct.
What's really enjoyable about this movie is the way the drama mounts, piling ever more layers of tension atop the previous ones, further and further. It's a game of upping the ante, but far from being a hysterical one, the understated nature of the direction, along with very solid acting, makes the high stakes all the more palpable here.
Stop the drill, Captain.
Why?
Because our orders require us to take tactical advantage of the testing opportunities that classified onboard equipment.
Captain, I need you to put us under that ship.
We have men below.
Then you should get them out.
Scott, we have a problem in battery deck 2.
Yeah, what is it?
Not sure, sir. The men are coming up now.
Mr. Kozlov, terminate the drill.
Aye, sir. All hands, terminate drill. Captain,
what?
Put us under that ship.
Sir.
We don't know who that is.
Mr. Babin, I'll plot an intercept for that ship. Put the moon on our stern.
Aye, Captain.
Sir.
Level the boat. Make our depth 10 meters.
Level the boat. Depth 10 meters.
Aye, aye. Level the boat. 10 meters.
We'll take a look before we get any closer. If that's all right with you.
Well, Jonathan Schack had a memorable role as the head of a vampire clan in 2001's enjoyable romp The Forsaken, but here in Phantom he does good supporting work, donning a tremendous Soviet-era handlebar mustache, I might add.
You realize this is supposed to be your patrol?
It was supposed to be mine, I'd be the captain.
Well, as far as we know, the party already knows about this and wants to see how you perform under pressure.
How am I doing?
That man has a nuclear firing kit.
You and I have the other two.
Captain Kozlov!
If you're ready to relieve the commanding officer of a Soviet ballistic missile submarine, your captain and your friend, because he fainted, then you go right ahead. I'll be in sonar.
There's an intriguing little turn at the film's conclusion. It's one which some critics didn't like. Overall, though, as underwater drama goes, this one really hit the marks for me. So fill up number one tube with the Phantom.
There are only two reasons why a boat would go rogue. One is to defect, and the other is to start a war. I don't think we're defecting.
We need to disable the warhead. He's trying to start the only kind of nuclear war we can win. One we're not in.
Now we move right up to 2020. A mysterious earthquake devastates a deepwater research facility at the bottom of the Mariana Trench. The surviving crew have little choice but to make a break for safety. But what caused that earthquake already? This is Underwater.
Listen carefully. You are now 5,000 miles from land, and you're descending 7 miles to the bottom of the ocean. See you all in a month.
Here we go.
All right, we're gonna do this. Let's do this.
Kristen Stewart takes the lead here. Yes, it's Bella from the Twilight movies, based on Stephanie Meyer's blockbuster saga of vampire novels. Here, Stewart sports a very short, bleached haircut, and she's really convincing in an understated performance as the de facto leader of this hapless bunch of aquatic survivors. Support comes from T.J. Miller, who you might recognize from 2008's found footage monster disaster movie, Cloverfield. Also lending a hand is Vincent Cassel, the veteran French actor who you may have seen in Darren Aronofsky's accomplished 2010 psychological thriller, Black Swan. Here, he runs the underwater rig.
On a scale from 1 to 10, how bad's my rig?
10.
Gotta get to the station.
How do we even get there?
We walk.
We just gotta walk with insufficient oxygen across the bottom of the ocean.
You don't know what's out there.
Worst idea ever!
Director William Eubank actually has more cinematography credits than directorships so far. It shows, though, his genre movies to date are strong on visuals. Eubank, though, is also interesting for the intensity he creates in certain moments. In 2014, he directed The Signal, a mystery sci-fi which was also pretty tense at certain points. In Underwater, check out the audio here, when one of our submerged survivors sees his helmet start to crack before his eyes, just as a pressure door is about to open.
Captain, I don't know what's going on with this thing.
I'll keep trying.
Where do we go?
Guys, what's going on?
Keep the door closed! Keep that door closed!
Yeesh. Just one of several very intense moments in the movie. Thankfully, the violence is mostly implied rather than being explicitly shown on screen. Part of the reason I included a 2020 film in today's lineup is because the underwater and submarine genre is so technical, so challenging in terms of production design and shooting. Modern movies can really help in that aspect with computer-generated effects, especially, for example, compared to something like James Cameron's The Abyss, made more than 30 years earlier. Underwater has been described as a B-movie, which I suppose you could say that it is, though I'm not quite sure what that means in this context, as overall, it's pretty darn polished. The narrative even devolves into a delectable H.P. Lovecraftian climax. So yes, computer-generated visual effects are used in abundance here by Eubank. One of the opening shots, for example, is a long descent tracing the vertical drilling shaft into the darkest depths of the trench. It's unsettling and ominous. The film's not perfect, though. Some of those effects sequences, especially those taking place on the ocean floor and on the external machinery, are just too dark, so make sure you're in a room with good blinds for viewing. There are unsettling and frightening moments here, as this is, in essence, also a horror film, so do please be warned. But if that's your cup of salty tea, then strap yourself into your escape pod for Underwater.
Do you really think that was an earthquake?
No, we drilled to the bottom of the ocean. And we don't know what came out.
What was that?
Turn your lights off.
As we near the close today, let's have some music from Underwater's soundtrack, composed by Marco Beltrami and Brandon Roberts. Well, savvy genre listeners will be aware, of course, that there are countless other submarine and underwater movies of note that have been made over the years. I'll just briefly mention a couple of other recent submarine films that didn't quite make the cut for me. 2014's Black Sea stars Jude Law and essentially feels like a pirate story set aboard a submarine. It's pretty well made overall and works as a decent adventure, so you might find it worth a gander.
Last year, I went out to the Black Sea. He found something.
One of Hitler's U-boats is just sitting on the seabed.
Full of gold.
I need men. Half British, half Russian.
Moving on, Thomas Vinterberg is the well-known Dogme director and collaborator with Lars von Trier. In 2021, Vinterberg was nominated for a Best Director Oscar. Though he didn't win, his film, Another Round, was awarded the Best International Film Oscar. Well, back in 2018, Vinterberg directed The Command. Starring Colin Firth and Léa Seydoux, the film is based on the real-life submarine disaster from the year 2000, when Russian nuclear submarine the Kursk tragically sank in the Barents Sea. Vinterberg's film is a solid submarine drama, very nicely made, though it didn't quite hit the mark for me, coming off as rather restrained. Perhaps the team were treading carefully, given the sensitivity of that underpinning true story? I'm not sure, but if you like submarine dramas, it could be worth a look.
What do we have?
Two acoustic events.
One small, one large. 3.9 on the Richter.
Mother of God.
We've lost the submarine.
The reactor's melting down.
Get out of there.
We can't leave, or everyone dies.
Captain, we heard something happened to the Kursk. Are they alive?
So, what did you think of the movie selection today? For that or any other feedback, please email us at morethanamovieqs@gmail.com. That's morethanamovieqs, all one word, @gmail.com. This More Than a Movie episode was written and presented by me, Andrew Bonello. A big thank you to our guest, Maxime Durand, for joining us today. And also, of course, to our deep-diving sound engineer, Redant Abdillah. The intro music was creepy comedy, and the outro is Inspiring Teaser, both by Raphael Crux at filmmusic.io. The clips are licensed under creativecommons.org version 4. Thanks for listening, and I do hope you'll join us again next week for another episode of More Than a Movie.